Welcome to My Heart Songs podcast number 80, The Myriad Forms of Loneliness. This week, I carried some heavy moments of cosmic ennui, what's it all about Alfie questions front and center. I wondered about addictions to our own ways of thinking, maybe habituation is the better word, that keeps us trapped in self-condemnation and self-attack modes. Clearly, the more isolated we are, the greater the chance that we can be overwhelmed by our own internal dialogue with its subsequent aberrant perceptions of the world and our place in it. All is yellow to the jaundiced eye, as they say. Reflection and contemplation are wonderful tools that allow us to understand, although they may sometimes be used for self-condemnation as well, reinforcing unskillful childhood patterns of coping and seeking happiness, or distorting our self-image in unhelpful ways. Isolation affects millions of people around the world, especially the elderly. This is different from loneliness, which is more of a subjective experience, harder to quantify. The two are clearly related yet distinct, with isolation and being separated from others occurring often by circumstance rather than choice. Estimates suggest that 1 in 5 older adults, especially those already marginalized by poverty, rural residency, and immigrant status, frequently experience social isolation. When we are unable to interact regularly with family, friends, and community, then isolation replaces connection. Ongoing research suggests that loneliness has adverse health consequences as profound as smoking or obesity. We all want to be seen, understood, and valued, if not loved, by others. When we are not, we may feel deficient, and thus more inclined to seek temporary relief in distractions, addictive and otherwise. When not satisfied, our human need to be embedded, connected, and integrated into a social network has significant physical and mental health consequences. We become more vulnerable to Alzheimer's, high blood pressure, and suicide. In one study of almost 3.5 million people, there was a 32% increased risk of early death for those living alone. Loss is a close sibling of loneliness. The work of mourning always invokes a sense of separation and aloneness. Some alone time is needed to move through the grief. Our consciousness that we are mortal is lonely, as is living within our own skin, separate from other beings, and the accompanying, ruthless, inevitable loss of function and abilities as we age. The loneliness of lost or broken love that closes our hearts, at least temporarily. The loneliness of missing specific people, both those still alive and those who have died. There is the loneliness of living in a self-imposed prison, unable or unwilling to manifest our potential. The dark and stark loneliness of our own shadow material, all those repressed, suppressed feelings and yearnings. The myriad faces of human loneliness are universal, ubiquitous, and enduring. Joy, sadness, fear, excitement, anger, calm, connected, lonely. Being human seems to involve experiencing a shifting jumble of emotional polarities. Loneliness is a shapeshifter, an amorphous presence in the depths of our sense of absence. I grew up in a front porch society where the neighbors would gather in the evening to connect and relate. I often say that human society in my own lifetime has moved from the plaza to the front porch to the backyard, to the living room, to our own room just connecting with an electronic device. Since loneliness is subjective, it's clear that living alone doesn't mean one is lonely, and one can be in a large family or have many friends and still feel disconnected. Lonely in a crowd is a feeling many of us have experienced. The continuum of loneliness reflects both intensity and duration. A teen trying to connect on Facebook on Friday night has a different shade of lonely than an elderly person who has not spoken with anyone but telemarketers in days. For research, the gold standard has been the 20-question UCLA loneliness scale, which is a very interesting approach to trying to measure this sensation more precisely. Ultimately, the triad of disconnection, longing, and rejection are what cause its pain. From an evolutionary perspective, loneliness might have been an early warning system that prompted us to get back to the relative safety of the group and not become easy, more vulnerable prey. Through such evolutionary conditioning, loneliness seems to stimulate a stress response and result in inflammation if prolonged, leading to its adverse health effects and perceiving a world full of more foes than friends. At its most extreme levels, loneliness influences the brain to sometimes misread facial expressions and tone of voice, interpreting these social signals in negative, threatening ways. Add to that mix the stigma of implied social failure and being irritable, self-centered, and defensive, and that person does not possess the best mix for creating connection. How to moderate loneliness. There is a great organization, volunteermatch.org, that connects one with opportunities in the community to assist others. Meetup.com can connect us with others who share similar interests. Social fitness exercises can also help. Look up from a cell phone to engage in conversation. Smile at strangers. Offer small acts of generosity. Ask someone other than Uncle Google if they know the answer to a question we have. Send photos or handwritten notes or postcards to friends. If someone posts something online about a difficulty, reach out with a visit or phone call instead of just a comment on the post. Taking those first small steps can break the pattern and open up possibilities for genuine human connection. Thanks again for listening, and remember, your friends and family can sign up easily at myheartsongs.org.